or the craze of medical science for the vermiform appendix. That played out. Now everybody who can pay for it is losing his tonsils. Newspaper headings: family of 8 relieved of their tonsils, save your pets, dogs and cats endangered by their tonsils. Concentrate in one place this bloody fad, or scientific racket, and there would be a fury like that at Andover, NY, in May, 1889. A bulk of water, foaming as white as a surgeon, it jabbed a bolt of lightning into Andover. It operated upon farms, and cut off their inhabitants. Trained clouds stood around, and handed out more bolts of lightning. A dam broke, and a township writhed upon its field of operations. Another dam broke, but the operations were successes, and, if there was much destruction, that was because of a complication of other causes. May 31 St. Johnstown, PA. If I can't think of massacre apart from devotions, I think that a lake ran mad with religious mania. It rushed down a valley, and, if I'm right about this, it bore on its crest, the most appalling of all symbols, the mast of a ship that was crossed by a telegraph pole. In a pogrom against houses, it clubbed out their occupants, with bridges. It impaled homes upon the steeples of churches. Its watery Cossacks, mounted on billows, flogged factories. And then, along the slopes of the Konmau Valley, it told its beads with strings of corpses. Earth-wide droughts, prayers to many gods, something vouchsafed catastrophes. That from somewhere else in existence, vast volumes of water were sent to this arid earth, or were organically teleported. Or that, by coincidence, and unseen, waterspout after waterspout rose from the Atlantic, and rose from the Pacific, from the Indian Ocean, the Southern Ocean, and from the Mediterranean, from the Gulf of Mexico, the English Channel, Lake Ontario, or that such an extension of such fishmongering is a brutalization of conveniences. Or that from somewhere in a starry shell that is not enormously far away from this earth, more than a Mississippi stream to this needful earth, and forked the disasters of its beneficence from Australia to Canada. 15,000 persons were drowned at Johnstown. Chicago Tribune, June 10, 1889. The people of Johnstown have lost all faith in Providence. Many have thrown away their Bibles, and since the disaster have openly burned them. By the providential, I mean the organically provided for. By God, I mean an automatic Jehovah. Part 3. 24. Emissions of arms, the bubbling of faces, at crevices fire and smoke and a lava of naked beings. Out from a crater, discharges of bare bodies boiled into fantastic formations. Or 5 o'clock, morning of December 28, 1908, violent shocks in Sicily. The city of Messina fell in a heap, which caught fire. It is the custom of Sicilians to sleep without night clothes, and from this crater of blazing wreckage came an eruption of naked beings. Thick clouds of them scudded into thin vapors. The earth quaked, at Messina, and torrential rains fell. According to Nature, December 31, 1908, a fall of meteorites had been reported in Spain, a few days before the quake. According to the wise men of our more or less savage tribes, the deluge at Messina, at the time of this quake, fell only by coincidence. No wise men would mention the fall of meteorites as having any relation. There were, at the time, worldwide disturbances, or rather, disturbances, along a zone of this earth: Asia Minor, Greece, Sicily, Spain, Canary Islands, Mexico. But all wise men who wrote upon this subject clipped off everything else, and wrote that there had been a subsidence of land in Sicily. It is the same old local explanation. Scientists and priests are unlike in some respects, but they are about equally parochial. December 3, 1887. From a plinth of ruins, an obelisk of woe sounded to the sky. It was at Rajano, Italy. 900 houses were thrown down by an earthquake. The wail that went up from the ruins continued long before individual cries could be distinguished. Then the column of woe shattered into screams and prayers. The survivors said that they had seen fires in the heavens. In Cosmos, N.S., 69-422, we are told that Professor Agamemnon had investigated these reported celestial blazes. But they were new lights upon old explanations. A blazing sky could have nothing to do with a local, geological disturbance. The orthodox explanation was that a stratum of rocks had slipped. What could the slip of rocks have to do with sky fires? We are told that the professor had reduced all alleged witnesses of the blaze in the heavens to one, who had told about it, with little seriousness. What had suggested levity to him, as to scenes of ruination and slaughter, was not inquired into, but the story is recorded as a jest, and it may be all the more subtle, because the fun of it is not obvious. About 6 a.m., February 23, 1887, at Genoa, Italy, burst a dam of conventional securities. There was a flood of human beings. An earthquake cast thousands of people into the streets. The sky was afire. There was a pour to get out of town. It was a rush in a glare. If, at the time of a forest fire, a dam should burst, thousands of logs, leaping red in the glare, would be like this torrent of human forms under a fiery sky. In other places along the Riviera, the quake was severe. At other places was made the statement that orthodox science will not admit that the sky was afire. See Pop. Sci. News, 21-58. It will not be admitted, or it is said to be merely a coincidence. CL Astronomy, 1887, p. 137 that at Apt, Vaucluse, a fiery appearance had been seen, and that then had come a great light, like a Bengal fire without doubt coincidences. The 16th of August, 1906 and suddenly people, living along the road to Valparaiso, Chile, lost sight of the city. There had come a terrible darkness. With it came an earthquake. The splitting of ground, and the roar of falling houses, intensest darkness, and then a voice in this chaos. It was a scream. People along the road heard it approaching. Chile lit up. Under a flaming sky, the people of Valparaiso were running from the smashing city, people as red as flames, under the glare in the heavens, screaming and falling, and leaping over the bodies of the fallen, an eruption of spurting forms that leaped and were extinguished. This reddened gush from Valparaiso rising, falling shapes, brief faces and momentary arms, it was like looking at vast flames and imagining that spurts of them were really living beings. In Nature, 90-550, it is said that 136 reports upon illuminations in the sky, at Valparaiso, had been examined by Count de Ballery, the seismologist. At one stroke, he bobbed off 98 of them, saying that they were indefinite. He said that the remaining 38 reports were more or less explicit, but came from a region where at the time, a deluge was falling. He clipped these, too. For a wonder there was an objection, a writer in the Scientific American, 107-67, pointed out that de Ballarisso dismissed the subject, without inquiring into the possibility that the quake and the deluge were related. Had he admitted the possibility of relationship, dogma would have slipped upon dogma, and upon the face of this earth there would have been a subsidence of some ignorance. The lights that were seen in the sky, said de Ballary, were very likely only searchlights from warships. The whole sky seemed afire, Scientific American, 106-464. In Simon's Med. Mag. 41-226, William Gaw, of Santiago, describing the blazing heavens, writes that it seemed as if the sober laws of physics had revolted. Or, said de Ballary, the people may have seen lights from tramcars. It does not matter how preposterous some of my own notions are going to seem. They cannot be more out of accordance with events upon this earth than is such an attribution of the blazing sky of a nation to searchlights or to lamps in tramcars. If I should write that the stars are probably between 40 and 50 miles away, I'd be not much more of a trimmer of circumstances than is such a barber, whose clips are said to be scientific. Maybe they are scientific. Though, mostly, barbers are artists, some of them do consider themselves scientific. Upon July 11, 1856, the sun rose red in the Caucasus. See Lloyd's Weekly Newspaper, London, September 21, 1856. At 5 o'clock in the afternoon, at places where the sun was still shining red, there was an earthquake that destroyed 300 houses. There was another quake, upon the 23rd of July. 2 days later, black water fell from the sky, in Ireland, News of the World, August 10, 1856. And what has any part of that to do with any other part of that? If a red-haired girl, or a red shirt on a clothesline, had been noted here, there would be, according to orthodox science, no more relation with earthquakes than there could be between a red sun and an earthquake. Black water falling in Ireland, somebody spilling ink in Kansas. The moon turned green. For two observations upon a green moon that was seen at a place where an earthquake was going to occur, see The Englishman, Calcutta, July 14 and 21, 1897. One of the observations was 6 days before, and the other 1 day before, the quake in Assam, June 12, 1897. It was a time of drought and famine, in India. The seismologist knows of no relation between a green moon, or a red sun, and an earthquake, but the volcanologist knows of many instances in which the moon and the sun have been so colored by the volcanic dusts and smokes that are known as dry fogs. The look is that dry fogs, from a volcanic eruption, came to the sky of India, one of them 6 days before, and the other 1 day before, a catastrophe. The mystery is this. If there had been a volcanic eruption somewhere else, why not volcanic appearances in Italy, or Patagonia, or California? Why at this place where an earthquake was going to occur?